Thank you to the worship team. Good word. Oh God, how I need you. How we all need God every day, right? Thanks so much for coming. Thank you to Jeff and Simon and Nate for all the work they did to put this together. And I heard the famous author is not going to be here tonight, so they got me instead. So I apologize in advance. But thanks for coming anyway. Just by way of background, I've written two books. There's both out. One of them is out there. One of them is all out, apparently. Thriving at College. This, just to help you understand what each one is different and how they're similar. This one is really for parents. I put a note out there saying for kids 0 to 20. It's kind of a joke, but it's kind of true, because the thesis of this book, so I'm a professor, so I have to have a thesis, right? Everyone has to have a thesis. So the thesis of this book is that preparing your teens for college is really preparing them for life. Because whether your kids go to a four-year college or a two-year college or a trade school or associate's degree or the military or whatever, they're going to go out into the world, they're going to get training in something, they're going to do something for a living, they're going to have a life that is either oriented around God and his ways or is oriented around the world and the world's ways. And so really, when you think about getting your kids ready for college, it's getting them ready to go into the world and to be a responsible Christian adult, to know what they believe and why they believe it, and to live in light of it. Okay, so this book is for parents, really, of kids of any age, but especially 12, 13, something starts to happen. You're now becoming you're changing from a child to an adult, right? And you got to start interacting with your kids differently because they're now young adults. You know, whether we like to believe it or not, whether it's, you know, it's amazing how fast it goes, right? Parents, I know my kids are just going by, it's flying by. Time flies, but your kids turn 12, 13, 14. They're becoming young adults. And so the way we relate to them needs to be changing as well, because they're changing. They're on their way to adulthood, and we need to relate to them as coaches, as trainers, getting them ready to be independent, God-honoring adults. This is books for parents, kids of all ages, but especially 12, 13, and over. This book is for teens, 15, 16, 17, in college. Maybe a little older, but are going to college a little later in life. That's fine. How to make the college years the best years they could possibly be. That's what motivated me to write this book. Everything that I wish someone had told me. Am I on, by the way? Can you guys hear me? Okay. Everything I wish someone had told me is in this book. I went to college by accident. There was nowhere else to go, so that's where I went. And I figured things out as I was going through, bumping into obstacles. And so this book is everything I wish someone had told me about faith, about relationships, about academics, about finances, you name it. So this book is for, if you're on your way to college in the next couple of years, this book is for you. Okay, so tonight we're going to talk about keys to thriving at college. And then tomorrow we're going to unpack how to prepare your teens for college with respect to choosing a major and choosing a college, and then a little bit more in the parents-only session later. To orient us, I have this guy right here, right? Good, cool. Okay, so four verses to orient your college years. So if you're a sophomore in high school, this is still important to know, because it's going to come right around the corner. Sooner than you know it, it's going to come. Let's just get a show of hands. Who here is a senior in high school? Okay, who here is a junior in high school? Okay, sophomore in high school. Okay, freshman in high school. Okay, who here is not in high school? So all parents, raise your hand. Okay, a lot of people not in high school. All right. Okay, so those of you who are in high school, it's coming faster than you know. Here are four verses to kind of anchor your college years. First one, let no one despise you for your youth, okay, but set the believers an example in speech and conduct and love and faith and purity. The world has this idea that young adults are incapable of doing very much. Okay, the world tells you that you're just kids and that you're expected to be goofing around for the next 10 years playing video games and going to the mall, and that nothing's going to happen until you're 30 or something, right? That's an absolute lie. The Bible tells us that no one should look down on us because of our youth, those of us who are young. So we should be an example in terms of our character and our maturity and our faith to others, living out our faith. Second verse, whatever your hand finds to do, do with all your might. Okay, so schoolwork is to be done for the glory of God, not for our own glory, not for our own honor, but for God's glory. Whether you eat or drink, do all for the glory of God. Okay, last one. You should love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and all your strength and all your mind. So college is a very Academics is the heartbeat of college, right? Everything else you can have somewhere else. If you want to have socialization, you can do that a lot of different places. If you want to work, you can work a lot of different places. What's college about? At its heart, college is an academic experience of training you for a life and for a job, okay? Now, this issue of loving God with all our minds is important because sometimes you'll find college students, there's a stereotype, right, that college students just goof around all the time. And the reality is it is a lot of work. If you don't work, you won't be around college that long, okay? Did you know, who can guess the percentage of people who do not make it through their sophomore year, from freshman to sophomore year? Raise your hand if you want to guess. Good. Who do not make it?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're saying only 1 in 4 makes it.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go over here. 30%. So 30% don't make it.
Yes.
Okay, other guess back here? What's that? 12%. Who has $1? Who remembers so Price is Right? No one remembers Price is Right? Okay, back here?
21%.
Okay, wow, precise. You guys math students back there? Those? Okay, the answer is close to 30. It's about 25%. So 21 and, yeah, closer over here. Okay, so it's about 25% to make it to their sophomore year. Now, another trivia question. What percentage of students start off at a four-year college and graduate within 6 years? Again, 12. No, that was wrong last time, too. Anyone else? Go ahead.
25%.
What's that? 25? Okay, not quite. A little higher. Go ahead.
27%.
A little higher. We're not that pathetic. Okay, go ahead.
75%.
No, we're not that good either. Not 75. Other guesses?
60.
About 60. 56% is the actual number, okay? So less than 60% of those who begin at a four-year college are done in 6 years. Okay, so that's kind of sobering. Okay, so the idea is that we should work hard with our minds in college. Okay, I got to keep moving or I'll get too far behind. All right. Three powerful feelings that college freshmen experience. Okay, and it's worth knowing in advance that this is going to happen to you. First one is loneliness. Okay, now you may think, how can I be lonely? I have all these friends here. Life is great. I'm not going to be lonely when I go to college. Well, here's the thing. You go from being on the top of the social ladder, right? When you're a senior in high school, you are at the top of the social ladder. You know your youth group really well. You know your church really well. Your family knows you well. You know your family well. Everything, you're on the top of the ladder. You go to being on the bottom, right? In a much new, much larger social ladder. Right, you're now a freshman in a new place, maybe away from home, maybe 50, 100, maybe 200 miles away from home. It's very different, okay? And you should expect there's going to be times when you're going to feel lonely. And everyone has that. I had that. Most students have that. Even if you're going to college in your hometown, you'll have times where you're lonely because it's just a different world. It's just now I'm a freshman again. Now there's new professors to meet. Now there's this, I got to go across campus to that class, and I don't know where this is. I don't know where that is, and I feel lost, okay? There's a proverb, 27:7 reads this way. One who is full loathes honey, but to one who is hungry, everything bitter is sweet. What does that mean? One who is full loathes honey, but to one who is hungry, everything bitter is sweet. What that means is that any companionship looks good if you're lonely. Okay? When you're lonely, you want any kind of friend, whoever. And what happens is it's very easy to be undiscerning and to get in with a crowd that will corrupt your own values and will lead to heartache in your own life. Lonely people find themselves doing things they never thought they'd do. And they're doing it to fit in. They're doing it to fill that ache of loneliness with some kind of companionship of some sort. So you got to be careful in those times. Guard your heart from developing unhelpful or sinful patterns, okay? And be patient as new friendships form. They do take time to form. But they will form if you go at it. If you're proactive and looking for good friends in good places, churches, campus ministries, get yourself a core group of Christian friends, and then those friends strengthen you to then be light and salt, for example, on a non-Christian campus. To be light and salt, that means you have to have enough maturity and character to be an example to the others, right? So in order to have that strength, you need to have strong friends that strengthen you. Okay. Yeah, covered all these. Freedom, another powerful feeling that you'll experience that first year. here's the deal. You'll never have as much free time in your life as you will your freshman year. And here's what I mean by that. You will, you have a highly structured life right now, okay? You go to school for about 7 hours a day, and maybe more if you have sports or music, right? You go home, you have dinner with your family. They expect that. Maybe you have some other obligations. You have a youth group. You lead a very structured life, and that structure actually helps you to have discipline, right? Because your parents probably expect you to be asleep at a reasonable hour. They expect you to do your homework. And you can't go off the deep end right now. Well, in college, you can. Okay? So that freedom can actually be intoxicating, no pun intended. We'll get there in a moment. That's another problem. But the freedom can feel crazy. I remember getting my first schedule and thinking, I have class from 9 to 12, and then I have nothing else in the day. This is going to be great. Then you realize how much homework you have, and actually you have twice as much homework in college than you do in high school. And unless you've learned to manage time and be disciplined and to prioritize, you will not have the skills you need to balance your life. Okay? So another thing that happens is, you can go to a movie on Tuesday night and come back at midnight, 1 a.m., 2 a.m. Okay, now some Christian colleges have curfews, but non-Christian colleges don't. And a lot of students reinvent themselves. Students from Christian homes will get to college and just reinvent their entire identity around whatever they want at that moment. And so there's a real danger there. So be aware that freedom can do messy things to your brain. So just be grounded in who you are. Remember who you are. Remember whose you are. You belong to Jesus Christ and live out of that, okay? Resist the temptation to reinvent yourself. You'll find students at college who came from Christian homes and reinvent themselves. So be aware of that. What happens is they start developing immoral habits, and then that makes them uncomfortable around other Christians because they know their conscience is guilty. So they stop going to church, they stop going to campus Christian ministries, activities, and then pretty soon they develop excuses to assuage their conscience, and they say, well, I'm not sure Christianity is true anyway. I don't want to be narrow-minded and bigoted, and I'm just going to, believe in God's grace but not believe in the Bible, and soon they're kind of off in their own world. I've seen that happen dozens of times. Okay, you'll see that happen to people, maybe even to people you know. So just be aware of that. Be aware. You need to know what you believe and why you believe it. You need to live in the light of that. Okay, less structure, away from household roles. Stress. Okay, last one, stress. Stress is very big at college, okay? Here's one of the reasons. Homework doesn't matter as much. Okay, now high school, you probably have homework, at least semi-regularly. Maybe you don't have that much, but you come to class every day, right? You go to the same class Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So at the very least, your teacher's seeing you 5 times a week. In college, you're seeing your teachers 1 to 3 times a week, all right? And the homework doesn't count for much of your grade. It may not even collect it, okay? So you can go a week, 2 weeks, and blow out your homework completely. You're in class only 16 hours a week, roughly, about half as much as you are in high school during class, all right? But then you know what comes? A midterm exam. And then students absolutely freak out, right? Because they haven't been studying. And all of a sudden, they have to do all this stuff at the last minute, and they haven't prepared time-wise for that challenge. The classes are harder, okay? The exams are harder. There's projects. You'll have social circumstances, relationships that are new that can cause stress in your life. A friend that's mad at you, or someone that you like that doesn't like you, or vice versa. And that can cause tension. At secular colleges especially, alcohol becomes a very common release of stress. Okay? The party scene. Why is there a party scene associated at, especially secular colleges? Okay, studies show, the statistics are that about 40% of students binge drink. Now, that is true at secular schools. I think that's not true at Christian schools. Those statistics, not 40%. Maybe a few, but not 40%, not even close. But U of M, guarantee you there's a party scene. University of Illinois, University of Wisconsin. I grew up in Illinois. A lot of my friends went to Champaign-Urbana. Big party scene. Wisconsin, big party scene at the state schools. Why is that? Well, it's the freedom for one thing. They have the freedom to do what they want. They have a lot of time on their hands. And two, this is a way to kill stress. Okay? Drinking makes them feel more relaxed. And then they lose control of what they're doing and they act like fools. All right? So just be aware that people do this and there's no need to do it. You don't have to do it to know it's stupid. Okay? One of the things you'll hear is, if you don't try it, how will you know? Well, I don't have to be stupid to know stupid. Okay? So you don't. The Bible is full of warnings about things that are bad for us. And we have to know that God made our bodies, God made our brains, and he knows how they function best. And being sober is wonderful because you're in control of yourself and you don't do things that you regret later on and that hurt your relationship with God. Okay. Four keys to thriving at college with that as background. Take responsibility for your spiritual life. That's key number one. You own your spiritual life in college. No one's going to do it for you. Okay. Believe it or not, right now, your parents are enabling your spiritual life, which is a good thing. They should be doing that. That's part of their job. They're enabling it. They're providing circumstances that are very supportive to it. It's easy to be a Christian in a Christian family. It's easier, let's put it that way. To have a good church and have a good family, that is the most supportive environment to be a Christian because you're swimming down the stream with other Christians. When you get to college, especially at a secular college, you are going to be a minority. Okay, and you have to own your spiritual life. Grow in relational maturity. Grow in professional excellence. Grow in academic competence. So we'll talk a little bit about each of these. Went to Smashburger. Anyone go to Smashburger ever? Never heard of it before, but it was pretty good. Anyway, so first thing is take time to read the Bible and prayer. Okay, there's lots of things to do in college. These social opportunities are overwhelming. Okay, there's so much to do socially that's part of the freedom that's so hard to deal with is because there's so much to do. Okay, you need to get enough sleep. You're not going to be able to get away with as little sleep as you get away with on a winter retreat or a summer camp. So you guys have retreats in the winter here, your youth group. I went to youth group in high school, had winter retreats. People would sleep 3 or 4 hours a night and get by, right? And it works for a weekend. It doesn't work at college. Okay? College is the longest time you'll go away from home and need to manage your own sleep life. Getting enough sleep is crucial. Same thing with Bible reading and prayer. This will ground you. This will give you balance. It'll give you ballast in your life. It'll give you God's strength and God's protection. See, the Bible will keep us from sin, or sin will keep us from the Bible. The Bible informs our conscience, okay? The Bible is God's word to us. It tells us how to live, and it protects our conscience in ways we can't totally understand. I was protected in college by the Bible I had memorized as a child. Those verses kept coming to mind, and they kept me from doing things that were stupid. Okay, I said I went to college by accident because it's true. But those verses protected me, and knowing God's word, having it in my heart, having it in my mind, kept me in a direction that was right and that was good. Okay, finding a church and campus fellowship. This is an urgent priority, all right? When you get to college, the habits you form the first month will dictate that first year, okay? The whole first year will determine on the first few weeks. A student doesn't go to church the first month they're in college, they probably won't go to church all year long. That's just reality. I've just been doing it too long to know that is the statistics. That's how it works. Because the habits you form are hard to break. All right, and no one's going to call you up on Sunday morning at 8 o'clock and say, "Hey, wake up!" It's up to you to set your alarm. Up to you to make that a priority. If you go away from home, finding a new church home, knowing what to look for. Okay, we'll talk about that a little bit more tomorrow in terms of when you look at colleges. One of the things you should look for is what churches could I go to in this town? If you're thinking about going out of town, especially, what churches are in that neighborhood that would be good places for me to find as my home for the 4 or 5 years that I'm going to be there. Campus ministry is the same thing, all right? You're going to want to have Christians on campus that you can know, that you can have lunch with, have breakfast with, have dinner with, that can strengthen your faith. Where are you going to find those Christians, friends? You're going to be in campus fellowships, some of which are church-based, which is great because then you can get two in one. Sometimes churches will have outreaches to campuses, and then you can find a church and a campus, a bunch of Christian friends on campus and a bunch of Christian friends off campus all at once. A good church and a good Christian fellowship on campus. You're going to need that companionship because your closest friends will determine who you turn out to be like. Whoever you spend the most time with at college is how you'll turn out to be. So you want to have iron sharpening iron friendships, okay? Proverbs 13:20 says a companion of fools, he who is a companion of fools will suffer harm. So it's inevitable. If you're a companion of fools, you will suffer harm. If you hang out with the wise, you'll become wise. And that's important. Let's go on. Have a plan to look for one and consider in advance choosing a college. Okay, before you choose a college, have a plan. Have at least two or three churches in that town that you can visit. Identify two or three campus ministries that you want to check out when you get there. Campus fellowships are not all equal, by the way. You got to make sure that they actually exist. Sometimes campus fellowships exist on university websites, but don't actually exist in reality. Now, how could that possibly happen? Well, what happens is websites aren't updated. So you can go online and say, hey, this college has three campus ministries. Then you get there, no one don't really exist. Okay? Call people. Meet with them. When you go visit a college, call the guy who's leading the college ministry and say, hey, I want to meet with you. My mom and dad and I want to have lunch with you. Get to know who they are. Have names and faces and know how often do they meet. What's their emphasis? What do they do in their meetings? What you'll find is that some campus fellowships emphasize Christian growth. Some emphasize fellowship and camaraderie. Some emphasize evangelism. Get to know them and get to know where would I find good friends when I'm here. Who can I connect with when I'm in this college? And don't choose a college unless you also have a plan to grow in your faith at that college. Okay. Establish close friendships with other Christians. Be intentional and be patient. It does take time, okay? The wrong crowds are often easier to find than the right crowds. It's easier to swim downstream than it is to swim upstream, okay? Take time to find the right crowd. Be intentional about it. Create boundaries to avoid moral failure, okay? You don't study for a test while you're taking a test, right? When you study for a test, before the test is given, right? So have a plan. There's an old phrase, right? Failure to prepare is preparing to fail, right? If you don't have a plan, you are preparing yourself to fail. Failing to prepare is preparing to fail. Go places in groups, especially with the opposite sex. Don't rush into a relationship with a guy or a girl. Okay, we'll get to that in a little bit later. It's very easy to do that, and I'll tell you why and talk about that in a bit. Some Christians leave the faith, okay? They just disappear. 1 John 2:19 says, they went out from amongst us because they were not really of us. But if they had been of us, they would have stayed with us, okay? Some people's faith is shallow, okay? The parable of the soils, right? I think it's Mark chapter 4. There's different kinds of soil, some that are rocky and hard, some that have thorns. So what happens is you get to college and you find out that some people who you thought were Christians never had any depth, okay? All you were seeing was the external conformality because their parents expected this or that, because their church expected this or that. They were acting out the Christian life on the surface, but it never was really in their heart. Okay, so just don't let that throw you off. That does happen. And you make sure it doesn't happen to you. How do you make sure it doesn't happen to you? Stay close to Jesus. Pray. If you have questions about the Christian faith, if there are things that puzzle you, if there are things that you're not sure that you believe for yourself, now is the time to ask your youth leader or your pastor. Ask Nate, Simon, Jeff. Talk to them now before you go off to college and you're bombarded with this stuff 24/7. Okay? There are good answers to the questions you may have. If you have intellectual concerns about the Christian faith or the Bible, you may think you're the only person who's ever thought of that, but you're not. Those questions have been asked for hundreds of years. And there are answers out there, and there are good answers that your parents and your pastors can help you find so that you have more confidence in what you believe. Okay. Grow in relational maturity. Yeah. Oh, hey. Thank you. I got the Smashburger water, but thanks. Thank you. Some of the easiest people, okay, where are we? Yeah, relational maturity. Yeah. Okay, so the people you spend the most time with are the ones who are going to shape you. That's the deal. Okay, Proverbs 13:20 is, he who walks with the wise becomes wise, but the companion of fools will suffer harm. Okay? So be aware of that principle. It's easy to be passive in relationships, all right? It's easy to just kind of go with the flow and hang out with whoever wants to hang out with you. But the truth is, you miss out on the high-quality friendships that are available by never going out of your way to look for those friendships. So make a plan. In Thriving at College, in that book, I give you some character qualities that are worth looking for in friends. Okay, I don't have time to go through all of them right now. But check out that chapter in the book and think through what kind of people do I want to hang out with. When you think about that question, ask yourself, what kind of character qualities do I want to be true in my life 5 years from now, 10 years from now? And then go find people who have those same values. Because if they have those values and you hang out with them a lot, you'll become like that too. And if you hang out with people who are lazy, who are immoral, who don't care about their faith, you will become like that also. Okay, that is really the truth. And so often you have people getting with the wrong crowd. It's because Jesus never meant a lot to them in the first place. So make sure of that. Okay. Like-minded friends make stronger friendships. Okay? The people who agree with you on your faith and on your values, they have the greater potential for lifelong friendships. Because the more you agree with somebody, the more you can share, the more you can have in common, the more you can connect, the less you're going to have friction. So look for like-mindedness. Look for people who agree with you on issues of the faith and who share your values of wanting to live for God's glory in college. You need to have that core group of friends so that they can strengthen you. Relational overload can happen, okay? So this is throws people off because this is changing now because of social media and stuff. So you get to college, you're going to meet lots of people. And if someone knows your name, they can find you on the internet, right? And they can start picking you, poking you, and sending you messages on Facebook and tweeting you and whatnot. And you can have tons of people who are out there who could be your friends. So you really got to have to be discerning. Every relational choice is a limitation. Okay, that's a weird thing to think about, but it's true. When you hang out with Mike and Andy, you're not hanging out with Steve and Tom. And so invest in the relationships that are going to spur you on in the things of Christ. Because later on, you'll be happy you did. You can make lifelong friends at college. You can make friends that will shape you for good for the next 40, 50 years. Or you can make friends at college that will screw your life up completely. Either one is possible. So choose, when you go to college, where I'm going to invest my relational energy. You need to have a strong group of Christian friends. That strong group of Christian friends will give you the ability to be light and salt to your non-Christian friends. I'm not saying we go out of the world. Don't hear me the wrong way. I'm not saying that we don't evangelize and we don't share our faith with our classmates, with our sports teammates, with our people in our orchestra and our choirs who are non-Christians. We definitely want to be in their life to share the faith with them, but we have to have the maturity and the resilience in our own faith in order to not be led astray by the wrong crowd. And the reason I point that out over and over again is because Christians are a minority on college campuses, okay? On a secular college campus, 1 in 8 professors is an atheist, okay? In society, only about 4% of people are atheists. University campuses, faculty, high percentage of atheists. And the more elite the school, the higher the percentage of atheists, okay? And they influence what goes on in the classroom, and they influence what students start to believe. So I can't overstate how much you're swimming upstream at a secular campus nowadays. That's why I'm hammering this point over and over again. Okay. Friendship can never be forced. You can only offer friendship to somebody. You can't make them be your friend. Okay? But it's still worth taking that risk. Not everybody that you want to have close friendship with will reciprocate, and that's okay. Keep trying anyway, because you'll still have enough that do reciprocate that it'll be good. Okay. Now let's talk about opposite sex interactions. All right. You're all waiting for this part, I think. Interact with the opposite sex in safe ways, okay? This is very, very important, okay? If you are not alone in private with someone of the opposite sex, you probably won't do something that you regret, okay? I've been faithful to my wife for 9 years, and I have a simple rule that I'm never alone with somebody of the opposite sex in a private environment, and nothing ever happens because you protect yourself, all right? So there's just basic wisdom that you need to practice when you're in college because you have opportunities to do things that you'll regret. Don't missionary date. This is a common one, all right? 2 Corinthians 6:14, do not be unequally yoked with unbelievers. What is a yoke? A yoke refers to a device that requires one animal to go the same direction as another animal. So a yoke is something that was put on animals and it made them go the same direction. Okay? When you become emotionally involved with a non-Christian, you'll go the direction that they go. You may think, no, I'm going to take them the way that I'm going. It'll be the other way around. That's always how it works. Okay, now, I say always. God in his grace sometimes intervenes and redeems those situations, right? That doesn't justify our sin. Okay, we shouldn't sin that grace may abound. Yes, God is faithful, and he sometimes overcomes those things, right? But that doesn't mean we should do them. Okay, so missionary dating is dangerous, will lead to hardship, and will lead to your sacrificing your standards to fit in with theirs. Okay, this is another one. Reject compartmentalization. What do I mean by that? In college, you may have already heard about it in high school, probably you've heard about it. Something called the hookup culture. Okay, now what is the hookup culture? Hookup culture is this mentality that you can have a physical/sexual interaction with someone of the opposite sex and it has no bearing on your emotional life whatsoever. It's just sort of like eating a hamburger and then you're done, right? You just go on. And that is not how God made us. That's not possible, okay? Now, people who try that lifestyle find out it doesn't work, okay? They hit bottom emotionally and often physically. I can't tell you, you know, the number of counseling appointments at colleges has escalated through the roof in the last 10 years. Secular colleges and Christian colleges have hired more and more counselors. You know why? More and more students are frustrated with their relationships because they're sexually involved with each other and they're wondering why their heart's broken. That's how God made us. God made us to give ourselves physically and emotionally to one person for life. That's how God made us to work. And when we try to do things another way, we end up screwing everything up. All right? So we don't come in compartments. We don't come in, I'm not physical Alex and emotional Alex and spiritual Alex over here. I'm just Alex. I'm all physical, emotional, spiritual. You are one being, and what you do physically will affect what you do emotionally. Okay? Getting involved with someone physically will mess with your emotions. When relationships end, it will hurt like crazy. Because God made us to give ourselves to one person, okay? Likewise, let me give you the Christian version, okay? There's something called, people sometimes say, we're not really interested in one another, we're just having a platonic relationship, okay? I've had students tell me this in my office, that this girl they're hanging out with all the time is just a friend, just platonic, nothing's going on, they're just friends. They spend all the time together, just the two of them, but they're just friends. It's sort of fooling yourself, okay? Just like you can't give yourself to somebody physically and not have your emotions get messed up, you can't spend all your time with somebody of the opposite sex and not eventually have temptations to get physical. Just be honest with what's going on. God wired you for intimacy, okay? That desire is meant to lead you to a spouse. It's not meant to lead you to fornication or to endless platonic relationships. God didn't make us to come in compartments, so your soul can't be best friends with some woman's or man's soul without it ever affecting your physical being, okay? And there's lots of romantic comedies that play off this theme, right? Guys, they're just friends, and then they fall for one another. And that's how God made us to work. So just understand that, okay? I'm not saying you can't get to know a guy or girl in college. I hope that many of you find your spouse in college, okay? But I'm saying be aware, be cognizant of how you were made. God didn't make you to get to know somebody without it bringing into, but without it involving a measure of tension that is part emotional and part physical. Okay? Pace yourself, okay? Don't spend gobs of time with someone you barely know. Okay, this is very common in freshman year. Part of it is the loneliness that leads you that way, okay? You fall in love with the idea of a person and not the actual person, okay? You have an idea of the ideal girl or the ideal guy, and you put that idea onto that person that you barely know, and you think that person's it. And then you start spending lots of time with them, all this time with them, and what's happening is you are closing yourself off from other relationships. You become totally dependent on that person socially because you don't have a lot of other friendships. You only have that one person. So I have a student in mind, let's call her Sheila, okay? A few years ago, she came as a freshman, smart girl, spent all her time with this guy named Ben, all her time with him. They were always holding hands before class and giving each other hugs and after class and all this nonsense. It was literally silly. They acted as if they were just married almost. And she was a freshman. He was a freshman. Her grades went down like this. The next semester, she got rid of that relationship. Grades started going up, started making more friends, was happier. Well, what happened? She had revolved her entire social life on that one guy, and that was just messing her up emotionally. Not to mention the fact that you have sexual temptation from spending all your time with one person of the opposite sex. So better let things go to build slowly. Let the friendships form naturally. There's no reason not to get to know them in groups. Build a solid foundation of a friendship, and then God can draw your hearts to one another. As that friendship deepens, something more than friendship can blossom, and that's the best way to meet the person that God's called you to marry. That's how you know. A strong friendship is what lets you know this person would be a potentially good spouse. Strong friendship, like-mindedness in the faith, you're strengthening them spiritually, they're strengthening you spiritually. That's a good foundation for a lifelong relationship. And that's what I mean. Okay, I already said that. That's what I mean by having a preparing for marriage orientation. See, our society has divorced sexual intimacy from commitment. Okay? Our society has told us you can have all the sexual intimacy you want and not be committed. So that's the better way to do it, right? Because then you don't have to be committed. And you can have all the intimacy you want and not have the paperwork and not have the complexity of marrying that person. And sadly, the majority of marriages today among non-Christians will be among people who have lived with each other before they're married. Okay? And that creates a bad foundation because that's not how God made us to work. What happens in those relationships when they're sexually active but not married is they're constantly having to win the other person's heart over and over again. You're constantly having to market yourself because at any moment that person could leave. So you're totally intimate with this person who can reject you the next day. That actually cheapens the intimacy. It actually degrades and weakens the emotional connection. Okay? When you are married to somebody, you can be totally intimate with them without being hurt. You can be totally vulnerable because you know that they're going to be there for the rest of your life. You're going to be there for them for the rest of your life. And that's how God made us to work. So connect the idea of intimacy with marriage. You can't have one without the other and really enjoy it the way God made you to enjoy it. Intimacy is heightened when there's commitment. Intimacy is better. Sex in marriage is better than sex outside of marriage. It's absolutely true. Okay, the world will tell you otherwise, but they're wrong. And when you really talk to people about it, you'll find out that it is empty and it does leave them hollow inside. Okay. You can't have all the benefits of intimacy without being willing to pay the price of it. When you pay the price of it through commitment, then the benefits follow. Okay. Professional excellence. Take ownership for your life. Okay. Practice responsibility. Acknowledge and learn from your failures and develop decision-making muscles. Okay, manage your time well. Let me do a little more about this. Ownership for your life. Let me say a little bit more. As a freshman, I remember turning in my first lab report and expecting, I remember I emailed it to the teaching assistant. I emailed a rough draft and I said, can you check this for me and make sure it's okay? what I really wanted her to do was to grade it for me and then give me a chance to improve it so I can turn it in for a real grade and then make sure I got an A, right? So I wanted her to tell me everything that was wrong so that I could fix it and then get the A. And her, I remember she was a Christian, actually, the only Christian TA I had that whole year. She wrote back a one-sentence email. So email was just getting, email was just started these days, by the way. Said, do your own work and check your own work. Use the library. That's it. And it was great. I mean, to this day, I remember her because it made me work harder. It made me realize that, hey, it's not her job to check my work for me. It's my job to check my work for myself. She's the grader. She's not going to grade it for me three times before I'm done. I have to go do all the work and turn it in once, and then she grades it. And I'm responsible for what happens with that assignment. Simon, is it possible to cool the temperature a little bit? I don't know. I'm like super warm up here. Oh, is the light shining? Oh, that's what it is. Okay. Anyway, so I learned from her, that teaching assistant, that no one's going to do my work for me, okay? I have to do my work myself. And I have to make decisions myself. And that doesn't mean I can't get advice. Doesn't mean I can't get help. But there's a difference between asking someone to help you with your work and doing your work for you, okay? When you go to the professor and ask for help, get them to help you not do your work for you, but to help you think about it, okay? I have students that come to my office all the time, and they want me to do their homework for them. And I tell them, you come to my office, you come for me to ask you questions. And I'm going to ask you questions that are going to lead you to think critically about this, what's happening here, so you can assess the situation for yourself. And it's more work that way for me and for them. I can just do the problem for them like that. I can do it for them faster than they can do it, obviously. But that would not serve them, right? If they come to my office for help, my job is to help them understand it for themselves. And I do that by asking them questions and leading them to think through it carefully for themselves. So take ownership for your life means understand that no one's going to do for you what you have to do for yourself. Okay? Not your professor, not your TA, not your friends. Doesn't mean you can't get help, but the help has to strengthen you, not make you weaker. So if someone does your work for you, they keep you weak. If someone helps you do it for yourself, they make you strong. Time management, schedule priorities. I already kind of covered that a little bit, so I'll go on. Commitments are important, okay? Psalm 15 says, integrity is swearing to your own hurt and not changing, okay? When you make a promise, keep it. When you set expectations, meet them. People remember if you don't, okay? If you are a flake, if you are somebody who makes commitments here, there, and everywhere, and then doesn't keep them, they'll remember that. And word spreads, okay? Especially on small campuses, professors talk about students as much as students talk about professors. So I've had students come to my class, I already know lots about them because their other faculty told me all about them. That one's good, that one's bad, that one's not good or bad, etc. So people talk, okay? And you want to be somebody who has a good name in your college. How do you have a good name? By keeping your word, okay? And here's a part of that, is when you make mistakes, don't make excuses for the mistakes. Apologize and learn from them. When we blow it, when we screw up, okay, and you will make mistakes at college, you'll have things that you know, disappointed you or frustrated you or wish you did it differently, and maybe a test happens and you didn't do well on it and you didn't because you didn't study the way you should have. And it's really tempting to make excuses, okay? Here's why excuses are so tempting to make. They shield us from feeling the pain of failure, okay? Let's say I'm playing basketball and I missed the shot that could have won the game, okay? What's my temptation? Is to blame it on the guy didn't pass it right to me. Or, you know, that guy in the crowd with the peanuts, he screwed me up. Or it was too hot in this room. No, I'm just kidding. It's better now. Something that makes the failure be outside, right? We want to push the failure as far away from us as we can so that we can feel good about ourselves. Nothing hurts worse than to say, you know what? I just missed that shot. I should have made it, and we lost because of me. That feels awful, right? If you ever played sports or maybe it's music, that hurts the worst. But here's the thing. Unless we swallow the pill of I blew it, now what can I learn from it? You can't learn from it, okay? Unless you take responsibility for the failure, you will not learn from the failure. In fact, the failure will more likely to be repeated, since what happened previously wasn't your fault, is probably going to happen again 2 weeks later. Now, the way to avoid it happening again 2 weeks later is to learn from it. Okay? So making excuses actually increases the odds that we will not make the adjustments to learn and to grow. So making excuses may give us immediate comfort, but it leads to long-term incompetence. Okay? People who make excuses feel great because the excuses make them feel good. It's like eating potato chips, right? It feels good right now. It feels good right now. And then, oh, my stomach is killing me. Too much potato chips. So making excuses keeps you at the same competence level, but it makes you happy there. Okay? Accepting responsibility, apologizing, learning from your mistakes is uncomfortable at first, but it makes you grow and become more competent. And then when you're more competent, guess what? You're going to be happier because you're going to hit that shot next game. Or you're going to get an A in that next test. Or you're going to do a good job in your next paper because you learned from your mistake last time. But that's part of taking ownership for your life, is when you make mistakes, you get back up, but you say, you know what? That was my fault. I'm going to learn from it. I'm going to get better. Or maybe you ask the teacher, help me get better. Academic competence, speaking of it. When are you ever going to use this stuff is the wrong question, okay? The question is asked all the time. All students ask this question. You're probably asking it now in high school. What is this stuff I'm learning? Why am I learning all this stuff? Here's the deal, okay? Most of what I learned in college, I don't remember the actual details, okay? I'll be honest with you. But it's used indirectly, okay? Arthur Holmes put it this way. The question to ask about an education is not what can I do with it, but what is it doing to me? And that's really true. It took me a long time to realize that in college, but knowing that now will help you. Education has to do with making you a better person, okay? And fundamentally, becoming a better person is what makes you employable. I'm getting ahead of myself, but here's a teaser for tomorrow, okay? Most kids go to college now for one reason. They want a good job with lots of money. Okay, I know all the students, that's what they want. The number one thing students want now is job, money. That's the reason for going to college. Here's the deal, though. Becoming a better person, becoming a better Christian, growing in character, growing in maturity, developing a well-trained mind that can understand English and history and math and science, that will make you more employable. Okay? That's what employers want, is well-trained minds. They don't want people who just say, I know how to do this, and you give me money for this. They want well-trained mind, flexible, versatile, able to keep learning, good attitude, honest, integrity, character. That's what they want. And so that is what ultimately makes you employable. But if you make that money your number one thing, you won't have what you need to be faithful to do that. So that'll be tomorrow. So here's the deal. Much of what you learn in class will not be used directly in your life. It'll be used indirectly. It'll enable you to think and live well. Solving math, physics, chemistry problems, what does that do for you? It makes you a more analytical, logical person. That'll come in handy no matter what you do. History class, what's that about? It's not just about memorizing useless dates and places and people. It's understanding how the past shapes the present. Becoming conversant on political issues, because the past is prologue for what's happening today. It's being able to understand the changing world we live in. It's being able to read the newspaper and read the news on the internet and understand what's fact and what's opinion. Okay, being able to coherently write a paper and express your view and interact with other views, that's making you a more competent person. That's what employers want. Good communication skills, ability to articulate your position, ability to listen well, read well, understand things, and then interact with ideas. That's useful in business, that's useful in engineering, that's useful in medicine, that's useful in law. It's useful all over the place. Whatever your major, here's what people want out of college, okay? Well-rounded, intelligent, articulate, flexible people who are able to work in a variety of environments, who have strong problem-solving, communication, and people skills. And see, any major in college can do that for you if you do that major well. If you work hard in school to God's glory, you can get those things in any major, okay? Now, obviously, we'll get into this more tomorrow. Obviously, certain majors are more appropriate if you want to go into technology, for example. We'll talk about that more tomorrow. But for now, understand that school education is shaping you Don't worry about when you're ever going to use that stuff. You will use it in ways you don't understand yet. Okay, find joy in the journey, work hard, let grades be the byproduct. Okay, this is what I didn't know going to college. Okay, I was the grade grubber. You know who that is, right? After the test, you go, you ask, can I have 3 points back for here? Can I have this? You know who that is, right? The guy who goes there and always wants to know, hey, can I get some more points back? I just wanted to get my A. That's the foolish way of doing school. Okay, I did that in college. It worried me to no end. I can't tell you how much anxiety and loss of sleep I had over worrying if I was going to get an A- or a B+. And now it doesn't even matter. Never mattered after that. Okay, 90% of what you worry about is irrelevant. That's, studies have shown that. Okay, grades are the byproduct of hard work. Okay, let them be the byproduct. You just focus on doing your best. Let the teacher do their job and grade your paper. Here's another reason why you should do that. Because what grades do is grades help you know how well you're doing in that subject. That's what you want. You want your grades to tell you how good you are at math or chemistry or English or history so that you go into a major that is consistent with how God has wired you. You don't want to go into engineering. If I teach engineering, we didn't mention that earlier. I teach physics classes to first-year engineering students. Okay? Now, engineers drop out of engineering faster than other majors. Engineering is one of the hardest majors out there, okay? Because the answer is right or it's wrong, right? If it's wrong, it's just wrong. So I teach physics classes to those first-year students, which means I'm kind of breaking a lot of them. Not that I mean to, but that's just what happens, okay? It's not my fault. They come in there thinking they're good at math and physics, and they find out that they're really not that good at math and physics. Now, what I tell them is, look, would you rather find out now that engineering's not for you, or would you rather find out 5 years from now when you're in debt $40,000 and you can't get a job? Which one? Say, well, I'd rather find out now. Okay, well, then I'm telling you, when I grade your test, that what I'm telling you is how good you are and how not good you are. That's helpful for you. You don't want me to grade on a curve because that wouldn't tell you the truth. I'm going to tell you the truth. All right, but what leads to success in a certain major, in a certain academic endeavor? Four things. Number one, talent. Okay, everyone's got different levels of natural ability. Okay, everyone has a talent. Everyone has some talent, but some have more than others in certain areas. Okay? You may hear of people who are born with a great voice, or they have an ear for music, right? Or some people are born really good at math, or they're really good at dancing or sports. Here's the deal. People have different levels of these gifts in different areas. Two temptations, fight jealousy and fight pride, okay? Don't be jealous of those who have more ability than you, okay? I was not the best student in high school. There were kids who got things faster than I did, and I had to fight to not be jealous of them. At the same time, don't be proud of those who aren't as good as you, okay? It's not about how much talent you have. It's about what you do with the talent you have. That's what matters. Okay, background. Some people go into college with a strong high school education. Some don't. Maybe you had a great chemistry teacher. Maybe you had a terrible chemistry teacher. Okay, so background you can't do anything about. That's in the past. You want to understand your background. Maybe that informs your decision to take a refresher course when you get to college. Maybe you decide I need summer school in calculus so that I can be better prepared for engineering in college. Know that your background is strong or weak, and then compensate for it by doing something in the next couple of years to get yourself more ready for college. Maybe you take an SAT class. Maybe you take the SAT twice because your first time you didn't do as well. Just be honest about your background. Some people have a great background. Some people don't have as great of a background. The next two are what you really can do. Hard work and smart work. Okay, we're almost done here. Hard work, there's no substitute for hard work. I've had students come to my class, physics class, and I say, okay, here's an example. Now you try a problem. I've had kids look at me and say, I'm not going to do it because I know how to do it. I say, really? And I say, yeah, I'm not going to do it. I already can do it in my head. It's easy. I just know it. The test comes. They bomb it. They say, what happened? I thought I knew all this stuff. The reason is, unless you work hard, you can't do well in anything. Even the most talented people, okay, Mozart, the Beatles, you name it, basketball players, they all work very, very, very hard. LeBron James works insane hours at his craft, okay? Nobody who's good at anything doesn't work hard at it. Smart work is important too. Not just how hard you work, but how smart you work. Sometimes it's a matter of going to see the professor for a little bit of help outside of class. Sometimes it's a matter of thinking more about the principles than about the actual details. Sometimes it's about not getting lost in the forest for the trees. That happened to me a lot in class as a student. I would take such detailed notes that I would get behind the teacher. So I'd be trying to copy down everything that they were saying, and I'd be 10 minutes behind. And I wouldn't know what was going on. I'd go, what's happening? And I learned that I just could stop taking notes, just try to listen more, and just copy down the most important things. And that radically shaped me. My grades went up a letter grade when I started doing that. So get help on smart skills. I have a whole chapter on smart study strategies for college in my book. Last point, recognize that grades give you an accurate assessment of your own true skill in a subject. That's what you want. You want an accurate assessment because that will help you know what area to go into and what area not to go into. Okay? I remember my first test in college. It was in philosophy, and I got a B-, and it was totally unfair, I thought, because here's why. I got A's in AP College English, okay? I think AP College English. Who's in AP College English? Anyone? No seniors? Okay, you are. Yeah, okay. So I got A's in AP English in high school, so I got college credit for that. I thought I was a good writer, right? I can handle this. Philosophy test, I got a B-. So I went to the professor thinking he must have screwed up, must have thought I was someone else or something. He didn't know that I got A's in high school. What is he thinking? B-. So I told him, I said, did you make a mistake? I actually asked him, did you make a mistake? This is how crazy I was, right? 18 years old, I said, did you make a mistake? No, I didn't make a mistake. You got a B-. I said, why? And then I realized I better learn from this guy. So I said, teach me what I need to know to be a better writer. And so I said, do you really want to learn it? So I said, yes. So come to my office tomorrow at 2 o'clock. So I came to see him once a week for the next 4 weeks, and he gave me exercises. He said, when you read a passage, first write down what the author is saying succinctly, and then you write your response to what they're saying. And you make sure that you interact with their ideas. You want to criticize them? Criticize them. You want to agree with them? Agree with them. But you make sure you first understand what they're saying accurately and able to say it in your own words in a way that's faithful to what they're thinking, and then you interact with it. And that just radically changed. I started doing that. I started reading everything I read. I would do that every time. I just write down what they said in my own words, and then I started interacting with it. And I started getting higher grades in my essays. The point is, I had to be willing to learn from that guy and not just think that he was wrong. Grades tell you where you're really at. And you know what? College is harder than high school, and your colleagues in class are going to be smarter than your high school colleagues in class. So be willing to learn and be willing to step your game up. You can do it, but you just have to keep working hard. It's like a weightlifter, right? You first bench press one weight for a few weeks, and then you got to go up in weight to get stronger. But the working hard now will prepare you to do harder things later, and doing harder things later will prepare you to take on more challenges later. I never would have written a book if it weren't for that professor. This never would have happened if I didn't have that philosophy professor telling me that you don't write very well now, but I'll help you write better if you're willing to work at it. So that guy, I'm very thankful for him. So objective feedback tells you where you're really at. And we'll talk about this more tomorrow, is they help you discover your calling. There's three elements in calling: passion, competence, and a market for those passion and competence. So we'll get to that more tomorrow. But for now, just passion and competence. You have to like something, and you have to be good at it. And grades tell you if you're good at it. And grades tell you when you're not good at it so that you can become good at it. Okay, so I wanted to write well, but I was a B-minus student. So what did I do? I had to work at it to get better at it. Okay, a lot of topics tonight. Sorry if I went too long. I can talk more afterwards, questions, and tomorrow answer any questions you guys want. College represents new dangers and new opportunities. So if I like college, these are the four keys. Lots more in my book if you're interested. They're back there if you want to pick one up. Thanks. Back to Jeff, I think, right? Yeah. I'll be here. Just want to ask whatever, but tomorrow we can ask questions too.